Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine, and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw. It all starts now on Sports Radio 104.3 The Score, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 104.3 The Score, our FM debut on this Saturday morning, and the free Odyssey app broadcasting live from your Hyundai Score Studios. I'm David Haw here in Chicago and with Bruce Levine out in Arizona talking baseball 9 to 11 like we do every Saturday morning. Today, waiting for football to get over so we can start another championship march for the Cubs and the White Sox. Bruce, what do you think? How are you out there?
I want to test my 104.3 voice, David. And do I sound like John Facenda yet or not?
Not quite yet. No, nice football reference. No, you are definitely sounding loud and clear and very rested, Bruce. You're going to be out there now for the duration of spring training. Lucky you. And it's an exciting time for baseball fans because there's a lot of hope for the White Sox. There's a lot of excitement over the Cubs. And you're going to be there beginning Monday when the Sox have their full squad workout and the Cubs later this week. So spring training almost here.
Yeah, David, in our show today, you and I have decided we'd like to throw out to our great fan base and listeners the idea of what are the major concerns for both the Chicago White Sox and the Chicago Cubs as you think about them starting spring training. What are your major concerns about the White Sox winning 80 ball games, the Cubs winning 100? How is that going to be accomplished? So we'd like to hear from you at 312-644-6767.
Someone out there saying, oh, Bruce has got the jokes already. The White Sox winning 80, the Cubs winning 100. What are you – you've been out in the sun all too long already, Bruce. Fangraphs came out with their projections this week. Very interesting. They would beg to differ, or at least their computer would. They have the Cubs winning 86 and the Sox winning 68. I do think that's a tad low for both teams. I don't know if the Sox are at 80. I don't know if the Cubs are at 100. But I do think somewhere in between there that the projections would be more realistic.
So is there one starting pitcher on the Chicago White Sox that you feel is automatic 12 wins, ERA of 3.2, 175 innings?
Well, that's a good question. I think that's a fair thing to wonder about as we sit here and the Sox get ready to report. Everyone's traveling to Arizona. As we know, we've got a big show ahead, though. We're going to talk about these things, the Sox rotation, the Cubs rotation, the projections by Fangraphs. What do you think about this season ahead? 312-644-6767. Call us, text us, let us know your opinions and your thoughts. We're going to talk to White Sox Director of Hitting, Ryan Fuller, at 9:30. Bruce, I think it's interesting to see where a lot of these young hitters are in their second seasons and how they maintain that. Also, Austin Hayes, the new outfielder, has a connection with Ryan Fuller. We'll explore that. And at 10:30, Tommy Hotovy, the fine Cubs pitching coach, will join us. Tommy, obviously a regular here on the station every other Wednesday during the baseball season on the Mully and Haw Show. He's got his work cut out for him again in rebuilding and restructuring a bullpen that every year seems to take a different shape, Bruce. So Ryan Fuller, 9:30, Tommy Hotovy, 10:30. And in between, we'll play a little game of Chicago Bound, looking at who still might be joining the Cubs rotation. Where do you want to start? Because I think with the Cubs, you can look at a lot of different things. The Sox, they're a curiosity. Where do you want to start this morning?
Well, I want to start with the Chicago Cubs, and I want to know how Matt Shaw fits this this triangle into a round circle. How does he fit for the Chicago Cubs? Where is his mentality opening spring training, having solidified the third base situation last year, being bumped by the Bregman signing, and now kind of being a nomad in Chicago Cubdom? Where Where does he drop?
That's an interesting place to start, Bruce. If you were to list the Cubs' top three things that you're curious about, is that at the top of the list? It isn't for me.
I don't know if it's that or Palencia being able to handle the closer role. I'm not sure because I think, you know, going into spring training, I think it's one and two. You know, the rest is, you know, you have a 92-win team. You brought back most of the starting pitching. The Bregman has replaced Tucker as far as your offense goes. So it's a pretty solid looking team, right? The bench is questionable after Shaw. You know, who's your backup shortstop? Who's your backup second baseman? If it's not Shaw, who's your right fielder hitting from the right side when you're facing left-handers? Is that Shaw? So there are questions, but they're really good questions for what should be a very good team, David.
I'll give you my top five quickly. All right, thank you for asking. So I think when you look at the Cubs, we'll start with the Cubs. I have a curiosity about the designated hitter. Moises Ballesteros is somebody that a lot of people have assumed will just start raking immediately. I think Ron Coomer might have a lot of confidence in him. He comes to mind first. But, Bruce, I think, what is your plan at designated hitter? Because that is something that we have tended to overlook as we have looked at a lot of these other situations. And will it be a platoon situation with Craig Counsell? And so my second thing would be, after the DH question, how do the new guys fit in? Cabrera, Bregman, big offseason. Big offseason for the Cubs. What the assimilation process, how soon do you become the guys who you can count on and they start to fulfill those high expectations? Number three.
Well, I mean, David, these guys are major league players. I mean, they're veteran players. Cabrera, even though he hasn't thrown a ton of innings as a starter, is a veteran.
I know.
He's been around for a while.
Welcome aboard. But Bruce,
I'm sorry.
But Bruce, you want them to stay healthy. You want them to hit. You want him to pitch, and you want Bregman to hit. You want these guys to be worth the investment and all the excitement that we have expressed over their arrival. That's the thing. You never quite know until you see them.
Well, I'm pretty confident that Bregman is going to be Bregman. The only thing you worry about is injury, right? And that is uncontrollable. That's why you have depth. And you know, if you have a concern for the Cubs, it's the depth in the infield. It's the depth in the outfield. You know, who is your right fielder when it's not Suzuki? You know, are you bringing Alcantara? Is he going to make this team? Or you know, one of the you know, peripheral outfielders that they brought in, you know, so are those guys going to be a part of the mix? I think they're good problems to have, though, David. I think they're really good problems to have.
312-644-6767. The questions we're asking about the respective camps, what are yours and what are you looking for? The last thing I'll add, Bruce, and this kind of encompasses both the Sox and the Cubs. Last year, second half of the season, the White Sox saw a resurgence, and certainly rookies commanded the stage. And you saw Colson Montgomery hit all the homers with that torpedo bat that he loves. You saw Kyle Teal. You saw Chase Mydroth. You saw a lot of things that made you have some optimism as the season ended. Likewise, on the north side, the Cubs got into the postseason with a veteran-led team, but two really young players, Cade Horton and PCA. Those are guys that I think are potential stars in the game, and they have burst onto the scene. How ready is this young core of baseball talent in Chicago on both sides of town ready to take that next step? And what will that next step, how much will it be? Will it be a baby step or will it be a quantum leap? And will it result in stardom for who? How many guys in the Sox fit that category? And who on the Cubs can maybe be the next big thing? Those are the kinds of things that as spring training arrives, you get a little bit excited about.
Yeah, I'm very bullish on the Chicago White Sox moving up, David. I think that, you know, the guys like Teal and Montgomery, and we know it's not always linear that they're going to be outstanding, but I think the experience they had and the knowledge that they could compete at a high level in major leagues is something you feel good about when you see their raw talent and their ability to step on it in their second year. It'll be their first full year in the major leagues. So there's no guarantee they're going to come out hitting and being star players, but there's a feel-good sense about the White Sox offense and now being able to add Murakami to the mix as well. And hopefully in center field, you have Acuna. So there's a lot of ifs. I understand the prediction of 68 wins. I think it's going to be closer to 70, 72. I really think because of their division and again, what Detroit did over the last week, you know, with
Framber Valdez. Valdez. I mean, bringing back Skubal.
I mean, they have to be excited in Detroit. There's a lot of anxiety in Detroit, but they have to be pretty excited about adding Framber and then Skubal getting his contract here. So with that in mind, I feel good about the White Sox. I don't know particularly about the rotation. I'm just a little anxious about that.
7-8. 70 wins would be great. Text in another 7-8 text. My biggest concern about the Cubs is the rotation stay healthy. They may have to go to a 6-man to make sure nobody is gassed in October again. How about 260, Bruce? Old friend reunion of Lucas Giolito or Jose Quintana to bolster the Sox rotation would please me. And then 7-8 again. Mo Bala, I think that's Moises Ballesteros, has shown that he can hit the ball. I think he'll be plenty good for the designated hitter role. 312-644-6767. Let's go out to the phone lines, start the conversation with James in Park Forest. James, welcome inside the clubhouse. How are you?
Guys, I have two questions. I'm not sure that PCA's first half of last season was not an aberration. And also, Shaw has not shown he can hit major league pitching. We need an outfielder, not hard you getting someone off the scrap heap that hits 210, a quality fourth outfielder. So what do you guys think of that? I don't know if Shaw will ever hit major league pitching.
James, thanks for the phone call. Bruce, to that end, Cubs.com had a nice statistic that really underscored what he's asking about PCA. The first 95 games, his OPS was 847 with 25 homers, 27 stolen bases. And the second half, the 61 games in the second half of the season, it was 634 OPS with only 6 homers and 8 stolen bases. What version of Pete Crow Armstrong do you think we'll see this year?
Well, having talked to him at the Cub convention, David, I feel that he's a guy that understands that neither one of those things that he was last year is really him, right? So discovering who he is he a 20 home run hitter? Is he a 10 triple guy? Is he a 50 double guy? Is he a 50 stolen base guy? I personally think, and I'd like to get your opinion and our listeners as well, I personally think he's more of that guy we haven't seen yet. The guy that hits the ball to left field all the time. The guy that gets on first base and steals 50 bags. The guy that creates havoc by being there. I mean, you look at his first half, he probably stole, what did he steal, 31, 32 bases. He probably stole 25 of those in the first half. So I look at him still as an on-base player, although he doesn't walk. I think the hit tool is there for him if he uses the other way. So I'm looking for neither the beginning of last year or the end of last year. I think somewhere in the middle is where PCA would like to be as a player.
Bruce, I think that's why this offseason, or maybe reframe that, this spring training, frankly, is very important for the rest of his career. And I don't want to be over dramatic there, but I think you hit on something that's very interesting and significant as he continues to develop, and he is continuing to develop. What is he as a hitter? Is he the guy that hit 25 homers in his first 95 games and then maybe tried to believe that, oh, I'm a home run hitter? And then he didn't. 6 in his final 61 games. what is he going to be this spring training and work on to emphasize? Is he a guy that's going to be a doubles machine? Is he going to hit for average? Is he going to go with the ball the opposite way instead of trying to pull everything and maybe hit it out of the park? Remember last week we had the conversation with Colson Montgomery and we got a good chuckle out of the fact, and he certainly did, when I asked him, are you a home run hitter? He didn't hesitate.
He laughed at you, David.
He laughed at me. Okay, thank you, Bruce. I was trying to lighten the load. I was trying to minimize my embarrassment. But he laughed in my face. But the point is that he considers himself a home run hitter. We'll see if he's right. With Pete Crow Armstrong, is he similar mindset? Is he of the same mindset where he's going to? If he does, I think he's probably doing himself a disservice, and I think he could be a better overall player if he doesn't consider himself a home run hitter and let the line drives sail out of the park on occasion, because I think Pete Crow Armstrong has all of the tools. So if he can hit for average, he's even more dangerous.
Do you as a listener think that we are manipulating PCA? Can PCA be manipulated by the Cubs? In other words, does our wish for him just kind of distort the fact that everywhere he's been as a player, every year he's been there, he's gotten better all the way from the minor leagues into the major leagues? So is that ascension just going to be natural? Are we overthinking PCA?
Here's a fun quick question before we go back to the phone lines, Bruce. Who hits more home runs in 2026, Pete Crow Armstrong or Colson Montgomery?
I believe it'll be Acuna. It'll be
not Ronald.
No. The Angel guy.
Both guys, I think, will have more than 30. I think you hope that they have more than 30, but I don't know the answer to that question yet. I would think that likely Montgomery, and maybe if what I just said comes true and PCA hits for more average and tries to be that kind of line drive guy, his homers are between 25 and 30 instead of 35 and 40.
I have another question for you. Will either of them walk more than 35 times?
Probably not, and that's a problem. I don't know if it's a problem, but you would like to see that number be higher than it is for both guys, right? That's the next step in both of their development.
You know, the fascinating thing for me about PCA is when he's hitting 01, 02, he's an automatic out. When he's hitting 2-1, 3-1, and you can say it about many major league players, but the reality is, he is such a different hitter. He, more than anyone, the count seems to be such a huge influence in how he succeeds. And in the second half, he was just getting down all the time. They were getting him on strikes outside of the zone. He was set up. And I don't think there's a player in baseball that is impacted as much by the count is PCA.
We'll go back to the phone lines in a moment, but getting a lot of text reaction. Bruce, 312, PCA is the least of the Cubs' problems. I agree with that. 630, I think PCA will be closer to the first half player than he was. The legit MVP candidate year in, year out. He could be. He certainly fits that. He does have the skill set. And then 847, I hope that PCA causes chaos on the base paths and gets the other team's infield confused like he did on occasion. I think a lot of Cub fans would agree. 312-644-6767. Let's go back to the phones. Mike is in Glencoe. Mike, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Good morning, fellas. And Bruce, when you head down to Glendale, what I'd like you to look at the Sox, and the thing that I think we haven't really focused on enough, is how are they going to get to 70 wins with that starting rotation? Nice guys, but unless I miss my guess, the maximum number of games that anybody won on that staff last year was 7. I think Smith and Davis Martin both won 7 games. How do they go forward and improve on last year with such a weak starting pitching staff?
Good question,
Player
Mike. Thanks.
Pitcher development, belief in the arms that they have, belief in the other arms. I mean, I think we're going to hear Will Venable in spring training next week, starting on Tuesday, tell us that guys like Hicks and Taylor and Bush and Newcomb are all going to be stretched out. We always hear this in spring training. And now for a team like the White Sox, and Vassell as well. These guys truly have to be stretched out because they're, some of them will be needed for a rotation, as Mike points out, that had the fewest starting innings in baseball last year. So there is a lot of hope that I'm putting out there that's not based on any type of reality for any of these pitchers yet.
Mike brings up a great point, though. If you're looking at the White Sox right now, and we do it all the time, Bruce, it's the fun of looking at your team in spring training. Who's 1 through 5? Who's your ace? Is there an ace? There's a guy who even qualifies for that category. Is it Shane Smith? Is he going to duplicate his success from last year? Sean Burke? I don't know. He was an opening day starter. Anthony Kay was signed to supplement the starting rotation, not anchor it. Davis Martin. Okay.
Yeah.
That's something.
I mean, I don't think you worry about an ace with the White Sox. I think you worry about competent innings pitched by the rotation. I think that's what you worry about. How many guys can give you 5 or 6 good innings where it's 3 runs or less and keep you in the ballgame for that replenished bullpen that Chris Getz has been putting together?
Yeah, that's the thing about the Sox. Their best starting pitchers, the guys who may fit the quality or the qualifications that Mike just described, are in the minors. They may start the season without the White Sox in the minor leagues and then come up and supplement a rotation that will definitely need them. Back to the phone lines. Kevin, our buddy is in Palatine. Kevin, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hey, good morning, guys. As far as home runs, yeah, whatever. I will take the higher WAR, which shows the true value of the baseball player, will absolutely be PCA. So, you know, to let Colson hit 200 and hit his 40 bombs and play a mediocre shortstop, but the higher WAR will absolutely be PCA. Bruce, I had a question for you, though. So the Sox traded for the center fielder from the Mets, and pretty much everyone says he's a throw-in, he's an average guy, and then the guy hits okay in the Winter League, and Ozzy says he's good, so now he might be a future All-Star. So question for you. Ozzy Guillen also told us that Yoan Moncada was going to win multiple MVPs and would be one of the best players in the league, and the guy sucked to high heavens. So just because Ozzy says someone's good, now all of a sudden everyone on the station thinks the guy's great. Please explain, Bruce. Thank you.
Kevin from the top rope, Bruce.
Wow, he hit me with a Michael Jordan being able to evaluate NBA players. He really, you know, Michael Jordan doesn't have any weaknesses other than the fact that he never could evaluate other NBA players. And now it's Ozzy. Well, you know, it's a good point. I mean, I do remember him telling us that Moncada was going to be a star. After 2019, it looked like Ozzy was going to be right because he was an MVP candidate that year. And then injuries and I don't know, what would you call it, David? Indifferent
Yoan Moncada had all of the ability to fulfill Ozzy's high expectations. He didn't do it. Sometimes it's up to the player. You don't know what's within a guy, and I think that Yoan Moncada had injuries, and then he looked like he suffered from indifference at times. Luis Robert Jr., Ozzy loved La Pantera, not just because of the nickname, because of the skill set. And then it's up to Luis Robert Jr. at some point in time to fulfill that potential. That's not on Ozzy. I'm going to stick up for Ozzy here. He sees this talent in these guys. Luis Angel Acuna is a guy that he identified last year and said to Chris Getz, you should go for this guy because he has speed, he can hit, and he's versatile. And Ozzy loved the way he played the infield. He still might be a pretty good infielder. It looks like he might start in center field. But I don't know that, you know, Ozzy seems like he's a traits guy. He looks at skills and potential. And when guys have not been seen at the major league level yet, yeah, you're gonna put the ceiling pretty high. It's up to them to try to reach it. It's not on Ozzy that Yoan Moncada lost interest or that Luis Robert Jr. couldn't stay healthy. I'm excited about the possibility of Luis Angel Acuna in the Sox lineup because he brings a lot of things they don't have right now. All right, Kevin. Kevin got me going. Bruce.
Are we going to allow any more Ozzy haters on today?
No more Ozzy hate. Enough with the Aussie hate. We're going to stick up for Aussie
here.
But our
phone lines are open to everyone.
Everyone else, unless you got Aussie hate. Take it elsewhere. All right, Bruce, when we come back, we're going to talk to the White Sox director of hitting, Ryan Fuller, here on The Score and Inside the Clubhouse. And then Tommy Howdeby, 10 o'clock. We're going to play Chicago Bound at 10 as well, because there's some pitchers out there that still might be in a Cub uniform by opening day, maybe. Keep it right here. Bruce and David till 11 inside the clubhouse on 104.3 The Score.
Colson Montgomery deep to right field.
Wow.
And out!
Yes!
And the Sox retake the lead in the ninth. This has been a wild game in the nation's capital, but it's Colson Montgomery to the rescue in the ninth.
I mean, this is a dude right here, man. When you pencil him into the lineup, you know you got a guy that's going to take a swing that means something every night.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. Thank you to CHSN for that highlight from last season. Colson Montgomery hitting another home run, and as he plans to do this year, a lot, from what our conversation last Saturday indicated. And it's time now to talk about that. We'll go out to our Score hotline, brought to you by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. White Sox director of hitting, Ryan Fuller, joins us. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm doing great. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. Happy spring training. You guys open things up this week. It's got to be an exciting time of the year for everyone. Back to baseball, back to looking ahead to what the possibilities exist in 2026. And I would imagine, Ryan, coming off of Sox Fest, looking at spring training in Glendale, with as many young, talented players as the White Sox had emerged last year, this has got to be a time of optimism for Sox fans. You got to be excited. How would you describe the mindset heading in?
Optimism is a great word. I'm walking the fields right now in Glendale. We got a great group of guys already out here, and there's a sense of optimism and just excitement with this group. They love playing together and they love training hard together. So we're ready to get everybody together and keep moving forward.
Ryan, looking at your new first baseman, Murakami, how do you look at the swing? How about the impact of coming from Japan to here, and how that's going to translate? How interested are you to see the contact level and the ability for him to catch up with the major league fastball going into the spring training?
Yeah, we're very excited to throw problems at Muni and see how he responds. And he's going to be arriving to the complex tomorrow. So excited to spend time with him, get inside his mind. And I think the thing that we have to remember is this guy is one of the best hitters to ever come out of Japan. And he's come over and he is ready to attack just like the guys before him. He's seen the success of guys like Shohei Ohtani, and he knows that there's going to be a little bit of a transition period getting adjusted to not just the pitching, but life in the United States, the travel. Everything's going to be a little bit new, and really, really excited to support him through that. And as problems come up, the name of the game with hitting is making adjustments, and he's really going to do that.
Let's look at some of your other younger players, rookies who emerged last year, Kyle Teal, Chase Mydroth, Colson Montgomery. Let's start with him. When you look at his power surge in the second half, I'm not sure if you anticipated that. I don't know if many Sox fans or observers did, but he certainly delivered. And now, coming off of that, what are the things to look for in terms of, number one, do you want him to think as a home run hitter? Number two, what are some things, what are the dangers that come maybe with that approach, or is that overthinking it? What do you have in Colson Montgomery, and what kind of hitter do you think that he will be?
It's incredible to look at last year, and obviously ending the year with over 20 home runs playing half a season is incredibly impressive, and it shows his ability to make adjustments on the fly. And for Chase, Kyle Teal, Colson, that's what baseball is, especially at the major league level. You throw a punch, they find a way to counter it, and we got to find another way to hit him in a different way. So Colson, again, this year is understanding where he does damage, the times you want to do that, but also times where it's a man on third infield in, where a line drive up the middle is going to be just as good as that home run. So understanding the game, making adjustments, and then understanding that what got us here might not keep us there, and we got to continue to make those adjustments.
when you look at Teal and the progress he made as a hitter and as a catcher, what is the next step for him as far as increasing the slug, concerning about the OPS? I just saw him for the first time since last September at Sox Fest last week, and he's put on some weight. He's put on some muscle. He's intent on increasing the ability to slug. Where are you at with him on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Physically, he looks terrific, and that's one of the things of playing your first big league season, the travel, everything that goes into it, making sure that you're staying strong throughout the year. So he's done a great job this offseason of putting a great base on him. But listen, this guy can hit. It is the ability to hit for average and that ability as he gets older and stronger to hit for power as well. So making sure that he's not going to one side too much, trying to just go for power, because it's an ability to hit line drives all over the field on different pitch speeds, different pitch types. So this guy's going to be a really complete hitter, and we're really excited to see what that added physicality does to his game, just overall consistency this year.
We're talking with White Sox Director of Hitting Ryan Fuller here on Inside the Clubhouse, 104.3 The Score. So we heard from Austin Hayes earlier this week, and he signed a one-year contract with the White Sox, and obviously he wants to play every day, and he looks like he will get an opportunity to do so. Your history with him, he crossed paths in Baltimore. In 2023, he was an all-star. What can you tell us about that experience and how it will help maybe him assimilate quickly with the White Sox? And what kind of player do the Sox have in Austin Hayes?
Yeah, great question. Love talking about Hazy, one of my favorite guys. And we worked together for 5 years in the Orioles system, so we know each other really well. We know kind of the checkpoints for his swing that needs to hit to stay really consistent. But more than anything else, what you guys are going to see, the fans are going to see every day, is a guy who loves to strap it on and play hard. He is a grinder, and that's going to rub off on the young players, of being able to be out on the field every day to take care of your body in the weight room, to do all those small things, to be super consistent. And looking at 2023, when he was an all-star, he cannot wait to get back on the field to play defense at a really high level and continue to do what he does with the bat, being really productive against lefties. And we're excited to see what he's going to do with a few adjustments against right-handed pitching as well.
Brian, going into spring training, Braden Montgomery certainly is a bright, shining star for the White Sox going into the future. But how quickly can he ascend to the major leagues, and how does he not put pressure on himself to get there quicker than you guys want him to be there? It seems like the tool set is there, the mentality. David and I have talked to him a couple of times. He seems like an extraordinarily bright young man and a centered one. Where do you think he's at in his player development to get to the major leagues?
Yeah, you guys have a great read on him in terms of being intelligent and incredibly driven. And I think the thing we got to remember with Braden is last year was his first professional season. So him getting to where he got at the end of the year and then having a great Arizona Fall League is really encouraging. So what we tell the guys in the minor leagues is each level is a challenge, and we got to make sure that you master that level before you go to the next one. So he has time ahead of him in AA to make sure that he's learning the lessons there to then carry to AAA, which is another challenge, and then ultimately the challenge on a nightly basis at the major league level too. So really excited about his progress that he made last year and adding to it this year at each level.
You know, Chris Getz turned the Luis Robert Jr. trade into like five guys, but we're not going to go through all five of them. But one of the more intriguing players that came back from the Mets in that deal, Ryan, as you know, Luis Angel Acuna has a lot of different skills, and he's a guy that he can run. Certainly, we have seen this winter in Venezuela hit for power. Not sure how he hits for average, but he did have some flashes with the Mets. A lot of curiosity surrounding somebody in Acuna who could help immediately, but we don't quite know where he could play in the field. Where can he bat in the order? What do the Sox have in Acuna?
Yeah, Chris did an unbelievable job of infusing us with more and more talent. And when you look at Acuna, he's certainly at the top of the list. What you guys are going to see is unbelievable speed. This is a premium athlete that can play all over the field defensively. unbelievable base runner and really starting to figure out what works for him at the plate too. So made a few adjustments over the off season that we really latched on to, staying behind the ball a little bit better, making sure his bat path stays on plane a little bit longer in the zone so he can cover pitches down, pitches up, and it's always good to see guys make adjustments and then be rewarded for it in the winter league. So excited to have him come to Glendale and then carry on with that progress. But you're going to see an ultimate athlete who's going to be able to make some really exciting adjustments.
You know, Ryan, with all due respect, I have to go back to the conversation we were having about Braden Montgomery and that, you know, he needs to, you know, show when he's ready, and you guys will know that, and that's how the progress goes. But that wasn't the case with Colson Montgomery. He went with you to the Arizona Fall League. You saw things in him. His belief in himself came through. The belief of the organization in him as a player came through for his promotion to the major league. So can you contrast those two situations, and, you know, could Braden Montgomery make it even if he's not hitting at a high level at AAA?
I think the cool thing to be able to look at with all of these guys in the organization from the DR to Chicago have individual plans, and within those plans we have key markers that we're tracking for each player. So while there may be things like, okay, the average or the OBP isn't as high, we have other markers that give us confidence that show, okay, they are making better swing decisions. They're controlling the zone better. When they are hitting it hard, they are hitting it at good angles. So with Colson coming to Arizona, making adjustments here, and then really going back to AAA, having a month for us to see how those adjustments played out and then feeling confident that he was ready. So although there's things that you're going to be able to see on the field, there's a lot of tracking that we're doing on the back end to make sure they are ready for those movements. So we'll be doing the same with Braden.
Quickly, before we let you go, Ryan, we've asked you a lot about specific guys and specific plans. Generally speaking, overall, as you get ready to gather everybody for another season in Glendale, what is the White Sox hitting philosophy organizationally?
It's a great question. Love to talk about it all the time. It really comes down to the mantra of barrel or ball. We want to be great at making swing decisions. When they throw it over the middle of the plate, we're trained to do damage on it. And if they throw pitches outside of the zone, we're trained to take those too. And that's really the football analogy, the line of scrimmage. That's the first thing hitters can control, is making really good swing decisions. And last year with the players Chris brought in, with the emphasis on that, we made huge strides at the minor league level, but most importantly at the major league level too. So you get good pitches over the middle of the plate, you're trained to hit them hard on a line. And that's always been the case throughout baseball history of what success looks like. So making sure the guys hear a consistent message, and we're training it on a daily basis.
Great stuff, Ryan. Really, thanks for your time, and good luck starting when everybody reports this week in Glendale.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Ryan Fuller, the White Sox director of hitting, excited about another start, Bruce. What does their lineup look like? Maybe we could take a look at that when we come back. We've got a lot ahead.
You know what, David? I'm a little upset. You got three good questions from him in a retort, and I only got one, and it was pretty much you and I. So I'm going to have to work on my questions as we go to break. It's not working out on my end.
Bruce.
You're doing your usual.
Bruce, it's not me. It's not you. It's us. Come on now. Give me a – lean in here, big guy. Give me a hug. It's us.
Don't give me that team crap, okay? Stop it.
All right. Speaking of teams, we'll look at the White Sox order when we come back. It's Inside the Clubhouse here on 104.3 The Score.
You know, I think that there's areas for us to improve around the diamond. I think at this point in the offseason, you know, really obviously like leaving it to Getsy and the group to identify, you know, for what we need, what resources we have, what is the best fit for us now and how that impacts the future. And so I don't think that there's just one answer to that. I think that there's opportunity to improve around the diamond. So, yeah, really interesting to see what these next couple weeks bring. And, you know, I know Getsy and the group have been working tirelessly to try and do whatever they can to make some improvements here.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. That was Will Venable on the Mullen Haw Show. We could go Friday, Bruce. White Sox have some options with their lineup. I think it'd be fun. I want to give you my projected spring training or projected opening day lineup for the White Sox before they even have begun spring training. What do you think about that? Think it's worth a shot?
Maybe we should have Pat Piper introduce you before you come on with this.
Get your scorecards ready. Get out your pencils. All right, Bruce, Mydroth leads off, plays second. Kyle Teals catches, bats second. Colson Montgomery batting third, playing short. The new guy, Mooney Murakami, he's going to hit 40 bombs, playing first, maybe. He's a home run guy. He's going to be cleaning up. Miguel Vargas, third base, batting fifth. Austin Hayes in right field, batting sixth. Andrew Benintendi, your left fielder, batting seventh, depending on his legs. Edgar Caro is your designated hitter. And Luis Angel Acuna is your center fielder, batting ninth. 1 through 9. You don't have Lenin Sosa in there, which I wonder about because he had a pretty good, solid 2025. But the Sox have an opening day lineup, potentially, that has some skills and is much better than I think than they've had the last several opening days, potentially.
You're only missing Kenny Lofton, Paul Konerko, Frank Thomas, from that being the all-star lineup you want it to be. It's not a scary lineup at this point. You have to be honest about it. It's everything about the White Sox is still a guess as to where it's going to go. There are very few. I mean, on the entire roster, what sure things are you feeling about the White Sox?
It's hard to have anything you feel certain about. You want to be encouraged and you want to feel confident that the rookies that stepped forward last year will continue to make progress. That's you know baseball, Bruce. You've been around it a long time. That's not a guarantee. So what do you feel certain about? Actually, this is an odd answer, but the first thing that came to mind is the back end of the bullpen. You almost feel most confident about the back end of the bullpen because of Sir Anthony Dominguez, Grant Taylor, and some young arms, and Mike Vassell maybe even, that have given you adding Hicks as well. So you have some guys who have proven some things and can throw hard and have swing and miss stuff. But right now the White Sox most predictable aspect of their team could be the back end of the bullpen, which is a remarkable thing to say and maybe even foolish to some people for a team that blew as many leads, 25 of them last year.
I would say the one guy that is the most intriguing guy to me on the White Sox is Grant Taylor, because of the way that they pigeonholed him into being a back end guy. Now, when you hear the rhetoric from Getz and from Venable, from Sox Fest moving into spring training, David, you're hearing, we can expand his innings in the bullpen so he can be a hybrid type of reliever. To me, that's saying, well, we're not sure we can get him up to the innings we need to, but he's a starting pitcher and a really great one in the future.
I was really surprised. Maybe one of the biggest surprises of what we heard in this offseason was when Chris Getz compared Grant Taylor to Mason Miller. That's a comparison you typically hear from a talk show host or from an analyst or from a fan. You don't often hear that from a general manager about a rookie after one season that puts the standard and puts the bar as high as it can be in MLB. That surprised me, Bruce. Well,
it could be a Paul Skeens, not a not a Mason Miller.
That's his buddy.
Well, I mean, you know, they're former teammates, and Taylor has that type of power arm. The problem right now is, you know, more than 35 innings, and, you know, can you move him up to 120 or 130? You know, can he be the Cade Horton of the White Sox in 2026?
Speaking of the Cubs rotation, nice segue, Bruce. When we come back, might there be somebody Chicago-bound to join that rotation and help Cade Horton out? We'll talk about it next. David Haw, Bruce Irvine here until 11, talking baseball inside the clubhouse on 104.3 The Score.